is a production of Cornell University.
It's 4:32. I know the quorum is present. I call this meeting the University Assembly to order. Welcome. For those of you who do not know me, I'm Jim Blair. I'm the chair of this year's University Assembly, and let me start by saying I apologize for the room change. We got booted about 30 minutes before the start of the meeting, less than an hour before the start of the meeting, something came up in the university. So there we are. Let's please make do with what we can, and those of us who can, please help out if we can move chairs or whatever. First item of business is the meeting minutes from April 22nd. Do I have a motion to pass the minutes?
So moved.
Moved by Professor Lowe. A second?
Second.
Discussion. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Noting no corrections, I ask unanimous consent to pass the minutes. Are there any objections? The minutes are passed by unanimous consent. Next on the order is reports from the assemblies. First up, student assembly, Ms. Bailey.
So we had our last two meetings of the semester. We focused on a lot of things. We finished up all of our regulations for our funding. We made a lot of changes to United Student Body, which is kind of like our branch of Towards New Destinations. And we also passed a resolution that was very much in support of the UA resolution about CCAT. Situation. So that's pretty much what we did, and the student assembly will meet again in August.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. GPSA, Mr. Bunk.
So I think we had a meeting where we gave our last report. The only thing I'll do is introduce Richard. He's our new president for the GPSA, and we'll be taking it over from the next year.
I know that Jeffrey Bergfolk could not make it. Cora Best, are you here? Welcome. Perfect timing. And coming back to the student assembly, Emma Johnston?
I think Emma and Julian are going to both be late.
Julian will miss. She sent me regrets. Matthew Battaglia? Welcome. We're going to hand those out later, but we can hand them out now. And so welcome. Next report, employee assembly, Ms. Schaffner.
Thank you, Chair. We haven't met since our last meeting, but I can announce that as of yesterday, we are currently down one member, and we'll be posting information about interested parties to contact us. So hopefully we'll get that settled soon. We will have our organizational meeting May 21st. So I don't have any announcement yet on the vision for next year.
Down one member on
the employee assembly.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schaffner. Faculty Senate, Professor Booker.
I didn't know last
week. Dean Burns did not submit a report in absentia. Final committee reports. I note, has Mr. Ruiz Calderon come in? Anybody, did he give anybody here a report from the Campus Infrastructure Committee?
I don't think it's met.
No, but he was going to give a final report, so no. So no report. Campus Welfare Committee, Mr. Moore.
So our work this year focused mainly on campus climate issues. That was a lot during the academic year. And during last academic year, it focused on administration response. There's a report called the Incident Management Team Report that issued a lot of recommendations. So we went through that, and one of the things was a Council on Sexual Violence Prevention, which I've been the UA liaison to. They've been meeting and they've been issuing recommendations. There'll be new training programs. And new issues coming up this fall. And then the assembly as a whole, or the committee as a whole, hosted a panel discussion with university diversity officers in December, and the fruits of that were Resolution 11, which was passed for the last 2 weeks.
Speaking of Resolution 11, I'll get to my report in just a minute. Anything else, Mr. Moore?
Nope.
Thank you. Codes and Judicial, I note Mr. Measy is not present. Anybody from the CJC have a report?
We didn't meet.
Okay, very good. No report. Old business. First up is Resolution 16. Before we get to Resolution 16, because that's probably going to engender most of our discussion, I request unanimous consent to move on to Resolution 17 very briefly. Resolution 17 is recognizing outstanding support for the academic year 2014 legislative session. It was handed to members and at the last meeting. Is there any discussion on that resolution? Are there any amendments to that resolution?
Yeah.
Ma'am? Oh, no?
Sure.
Hearing none, are we prepared to call the question? The question has been called. Is there a second? Very good. We have a second. All in favor of passing Resolution 17, raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I count 12. Against? Abstain? Motion carries. Thank you. We'll return to the order of the day, which is Resolution 16. Because of how Resolution 16 has come to be, I am its sponsor. Therefore, I am turning the gavel over to Melissa, who will chair the meeting for that resolution. And Madam Chair, if you'll give me a moment to get the computer up.
I'm sorry, Jim.
As we attempt to transition.
Sorry.
Resolution 17. The issue before us in February, the University Assembly was asked to support Faculty Senate Resolution 10-13. Summarizing, you have a copy of the Faculty Senate Resolution before you, or is there anybody who needs a copy? Okay. It had two main points. It recommended a more aggressive stance by Cornell to achieve Cornell carbon neutrality by 2035. It also had a second point to divest from companies producing fossil fuels consistent with Cornell's progress towards carbon neutrality. That's my summary, but I think those are the two key points, carbon neutrality by 2035 and divestment. Background, after that came to us, this assembly received presentations in support of Faculty Senate 10-13 from the sponsors and supporters of that resolution. We also received a presentation from Cornell's Office of Sustainability, or the Cornell's Sustainability Office, about the where we are in our progress towards sustainability at Cornell, plus what it would take to get to neutrality. We received a presentation from Cornell's Chief Investment Officer, frankly concerned about the effects of divestment. We heard from Cornell's Vice President for Finance and CFO. She was concerned about the potential financial ramifications. And prior to those meetings, of course, we had a meeting with President Skorton where we asked him about this, and he had told us before we even took up this issue that he had already supported moving up carbon neutrality by 2035, but he was not supporting divestment at this time because he was not sure in his mind that it would not hurt Cornell financially because we live off the endowment. So he had looked at it. He was not sure. That's all the testimony, summary of the testimony you've heard. After that body of testimony, as you know, I submitted variations, draft variations X1 and X2 for your consideration. X1 was for moving up carbon neutrality to 2035, or supporting that goal, and for divestment, as stated in the Faculty Senate resolution. X2 was for carbon neutrality by 2035, but opposed or against divestment. Okay? Two versions. I sent those out for a straw poll. You responded 2-1 in favor of X2. That led to my drafting of UA Resolution 16, which is for the goal of carbon neutrality by 2035 and against divestment. I'm sorry, I know I keep walking in front of you. Against the issue of divestment. We've
We brought this to you on April 22nd, which was only 2 weeks ago, because of our timelines at the end of the year. You accepted that resolution for debate today, and at Ms. Bailick's request, we posted for public comment, and it was posted for more than a week. Public comments. We received 49 public comments in all. There are table copies about you, and they both were sent to you last Friday. They were all for divestment. In other words, against the resolution, but the common thread is they were for divestment. Nobody gave any comments against the goal of carbon neutrality by 2035. We received no comments or testimony whatsoever against that particular aspect of the resolution. It all centered on divestment. This is my summary of those 18 pages of comments, and I just put a line in them. There's the negatives, and then what I call the positives. So the negatives is there were several who thought it was hypocritical to champion carbon neutrality and be against divestment. There were others who said it was unethical to profit from fossil fuel companies. There was a few comments that contradicts the other three assemblies on this matter who were voted in favor of 1013 or similar resolutions. Some said it's a poor example for students. The flip side, there was a body of comments that said Cornell should lead by example, very much in line with what the supporters of 10-13 told you, that there is great power in symbolism. There is debate as to whether, in their view, divesting the amount of money from Cornell is even symbolic. They think it's powerful, even more than just symbolic. There was one comment in particular, but there was a common thread that the case for carbon neutrality is urgent and that Cornell should use all her tools, divestment being one of those tools, and so therefore we should not be against divestment. And there were a couple of alumni comments in there that said, you know, alumni are not against divestment in their view, that they support social and ethical causes, and that they would not be surprised by if Cornell took an action like this, there wouldn't be some kind of chain reaction adverse from the alumni. That's really, facts not in evidence, but that is the case that some of the public comments made. You've read them all. I don't think I missed any large themes. Some were very articulate, some were very terse and to the point, as you might imagine. So, now coming into the resolution. You've all heard testimony in your own assemblies, you've heard testimony in this assembly. And in canvassing you in the straw poll, most of you have come to firm views on what you think about this issue, for or for against, at least that level of the issue. For divestment, in my estimation, if you are opposed to R16 and therefore the second tenet, that you would be for divestment. You believe the case is clear, urgent, and unique. Those are my words, but why do I use them? That because of, and I'll get into the slippery slope issue. How is this different than pollution, deforestation, Middle East peace? Okay, all these people too look to this example and go, we should not spend Cornell's endowment for X. And they would have a case, and then it would be, you know, the same issue, somewhat hypocritical. So is this case, does it rise above? The example of Darfur presented by the supporters, I would tell you, divestment is powerful if enough people divest. I think most people here would agree that with that. But my question to you is, in your mind, is carbon neutrality, today's world, unique enough to carve it out like Darfur or South Africa versus all the other wonderful and important issues that face the world and this university? Okay? It's a decision you have to make. I'm not trying to advocate one or another. I would tell you that there's no free lunch. So if you can't, in your mind, make this stand above, it's clearly important. I think everybody I've talked to in here believes that carbon neutrality and global warming are important issues. They're not so certain that divestment is an arrow that we should shoot out of our quiver on this issue. Some of you do think it is. The symbolism matters. Why do I say symbolism? Some of the comments really took exception to the word symbolic. In the context of how I wrote it, you have testimony from Cornell's chief investment officer that 9% of the long-term investment is in energy sectors. That's not all fossil fuel, but energy sectors. Worst case, that's $500 million. Okay, $500 million. This is big money. But big oil and energy is a 4.5 or better trillion dollar industry. If all of the IVs divested from fossil fuels, nobody'd know other than us. We talk about it in forums, so there's a symbolism, there's a leadership issue that could be won by divesting, but you're not going to do anything to the fossil fuel companies, certainly not in the short term. If this were to catch fire across the nation and dominoes would fall, who knows? That's what I think some of the sponsors would hope would happen. But I can tell you, and I will tell you, Harvard recently, they had a $33 billion endowment, said they're not going to divest, that this doesn't rise to the test. Although they did do something interesting that I'll tell you about in a minute. But if you are against this resolution, whether you amend it to change the second tenet or not, what I think you're saying is the president you already know has made his decision. You want us to tell the president and the trustees they should reconsider that. They got it wrong. They got it wrong, and this is our resolution to tell them. We amend the resolution and pass something different that says you need to reconsider. That was essentially X1 of what I sent you before. The case against, you need to remember there's no free lunch. Cornell lives off our long-term investment pool. It provides 10% or more of our operating capital. As you heard with TCAT, students are tired of their increases. $200 is a big deal to freshmen. $500,000 is not easy money to come by in the 2.08 annual budget. Those are facts that you receive from people far more competent than me. President Skorton said at the time he came that at the end of a $2.08 billion annual budget, $2 million might be in excess. I spoke to Joanne DiStefano, the Vice President for Finance, just a week ago. She says right now they're projecting a surplus of $900,000 at year-end, June 30th, of which we've already tried to put a cap of $500,000 for first-year freshman bus passes. So there is no free lunch. You need to realize that if you sponsor this and Cornell were to follow our advice, which is, you know, a different issue altogether, but if they were, there could be a financial penalty to us. The sponsors would say, and frankly I would agree with them somewhat, that we don't know what future markets are going to do, and if they have time to plan, it's time to phase out and do these kinds of things, we really don't know whether the impact would be very negative or not. So I'm not going to get into I don't know what you call it, but, you know, worst case scenarios, you know, where we could lose $2 million a year. But I can tell you, and you did hear, that Joanne DiStefano is worried about it, and that it would have short-term financial consequences that would not be good for the university, and meaning something else would have to give. You need to be aware of that. I, personally, am very sensitive to the slippery slope issue. Okay? How is this different from Middle East peace, defense, pollution, deforestation, all important issues, okay? I think the proponents would say, well, those aren't before you now, and you should do something if you can versus nothing because it seems too daunting. I would tell you, and so here's my personal advocacy, that when I get faced with these conundrums of it's not a perfect world and even a great university does seemingly contradictory things, I go back to what is the mission of the organization you're looking at. We educate students, we do cutting edge research. That's what we do. We're not a hedge fund for alternate energy. Okay, so when I'm facing these conundrums, I look at what we're supposed to be doing as an organization and how does that apply to what I can influence. We can hold sustainability conferences. We can count the Atkins Center. We can promote degrees and discourse among fossil fuel companies and others. We can take leadership on this issue with or without investment. And I think we've shown a willingness to try and do that. And a lot of people, even in the since the Faculty Senate resolution, have signed on to the Atkins Center and those kinds of things. Okay? That is stuff we can do. $500 million will not make a difference to the fossil fuel folks. It will give us a moral high ground, and I would say, okay, we would certainly get some news press. Absolutely get some news press. And then what? I think the slippery slope is a dangerous one. At this point in time in history, my personal view is that this does not rise to the test of Darfur or South Africa. You all have to make your own decision, and you may very well come to a different conclusion. But you be aware, it's a slippery slope issue. That's not a reason not to do it. If you think that you need to tell the president and the trustees, they got it wrong. Hopefully I've been fair to both sides. If not, you'll call me on the carpet right now. Now I'm chair.
So with that, we're first going to have UA members have the first speakers list, and then once everyone has had a chance to talk for once if they want to, I'll open up to community members. So is there anyone from the UA that would like to ask questions or talk?
Both of your first slide, is there an indication in any of the resolutions that have been forward of a timetable for divestment? It says consistent with the goal of carbon neutrality in 2035. That means you can do absolutely nothing until 2034. Is there a timeline for divestment?
I haven't seen it in resolutions, but as we saw in the climate or the sustainability office, there was no hard, fast, I thought there was a curve in here. But basically, it was one of these numbers. The first third has been achieved. The second third was going to be a lot of building renovation. It was going to be expensive, but, we need to take all these old buildings and we need to turn them into something that isn't bleeding energy. And that final third, I believe, was geothermal plus habit change. Driving, bicycling, stations.
But in fact, for or against, whatever, if this resolution is not passed and make a recommendation, it doesn't mean that tomorrow they're going to sell everything they have in Exxon and that the university is going to go bankrupt.
Clarification. So you're talking about the investment. It sounds like you're talking about the sustainability.
So the resolution, the Faculty Senate resolution calls for divestment in line with our goals towards carbon neutrality by 2035. So by 2035, we would not be invested in the top 200, I believe, fossil fuel producing companies.
So I think that's the answer.
But that also means that you could take that money and invest. It's not like that money is lost. You could take that money and invest it in companies that are consistent with reaching the goals that may in fact ultimately bring more return than Exxon or Mobil or the fracking companies or whatever. Right?
So,
I mean, in other words, I heard nothing in the presentations by that we had that PowerPoint in terms of the timeline. And again, when it comes time to vote, I'll vote. But the point is that when you start talking about loss, it's not like that money is just disappearing. We're giving it away. That money is going to be reinvested. We have some very smart people in that office that do nothing but look at how they're going to put that endowment money to work. And there's nothing that says that endowment money can't be moved to things that may be even more lucrative, depending upon how that's done. So simply saying yes, we want to divest doesn't indicate that we're going to do it tomorrow, and also doesn't indicate that we're purposefully going to go to companies that will make us lose money.
If I would say that the chief investment officer would say at one level he agrees, but there's more manpower involved. Startup companies and alternate energy companies have had very mixed results. The sponsors, I believe, would say Cornell doesn't have to do any divestment really for the next a significant period. It's not, if the university backed us tomorrow, we wouldn't have to pitch our portfolio immediately. It could be gradual and worked into their workflow. But it would be part of their workflow.
Okay. Next one, speaker list, Sarah.
Great. So, Dr. Love, to answer your question, I've asked AJ that question before, and the answer he gave me was that he doesn't want to tell his managers what to do and what not to do, which I think is a little bit hypocritical in itself. Anyway, I could spend a lot of time talking about how hypocritical it could be to say yes to the 2035 deadline, but not support divestment. I could spend a lot of time talking about how a lot of students are drawn to Cornell because it is a leader in sustainability. I could spend a lot of time talking about, you know, just because this might not happen, no matter the outcome of this vote, doesn't mean that we shouldn't vote in the way that we think is right and in the way that we think represents our constituents. What I am going to talk about is that it's our job as members of the university assembly to represent our respective constituencies. It's clear in this case that three of these constituencies are overwhelmingly in favor of divestment. If we vote down this resolution and are in favor with what the other assemblies, what the other assemblies work so hard to do, we're proving that the shared governance system maybe has some life left in it. I know there are some people who gave it a funeral last week, but I think what we need to recognize here is that it's our job to represent, it's our job to tell the president that maybe he does need to reconsider this, and maybe we do need to keep people talking about divestment, because if we vote in favor of this resolution, I'm worried that the conversation is going to stop here, especially in terms of the administration. And I think that even having this debate on campus has kept students talking. I know that it's definitely educated a lot of my friends about what it means to be sustainable, what it means to have an endowment, what it means to invest. And I think it would be a disgrace if we pass this resolution today.
Inquiry, I'm not quite sure where it lies. Could somebody maybe elaborate on the public comment period and the public engagement process that the other three assemblies partook in to be representative of their constituencies in passing this resolution?
So I'll give each a representative from each assembly maybe like 30 seconds each to kind of talk about what their assembly did on these issues. So Sarah, do you want to just start and say what your assembly did?
Yeah, so we've been working on this for over 2 years. It went through two of our committees. We spent a lot of time, maybe I should start from the beginning. This actually, the resolution that we originally passed evolved from a conglomerate of student groups who approached us with the idea. We worked with them to craft the resolution, and then we brought it to our committees where groups of students could take a look at it and see what they thought. We also had several speakers come in to talk about divestment at our meetings, and also we had a little debate.
Something from the GPSA.
So the resolution was sent, faculty senate resolution was sent to the GPSA. We could look at it and vote it on the subsequent meeting. Just in terms of the presentation, that presentation, the numbers in there, there was some debate as to the veracity of those numbers. Those did not show up in the UA presentation. So in terms of that argument, that's completely different. Additionally, we did not hear from A.J. Edwards, the investment officer, and so there was no forward.
Somebody from the faculty senate?
I'm not sure. There was a public comment. We actually had some speakers come and present the four views primarily. There was some comments, I believe, by the president to sort of address the issue at one point, but there was an effort to solicit, let's say, negative responses to the resolution.
Can I make a point of clarification on that?
Sure.
One of the faculty senate representatives from chemistry, John Rohn, actually told me that that was actually put, the vote was pushed through without either chemistry representative present, and they had objections to it, but they were unwilling to.
You said chemistry was against it?
They just had reservations.
For us, the constituency involves your department. That's as opposed to the whole campus of the university. Although I'd like to say, in general, my view is I'm elected as a member of the faculty senate, but I make independent decisions that I think are best for my constituency, although I do solicit input, and it is possible for me to, on some occasions, to actually disagree. So I don't think our goal is to necessarily agree with our constituencies all the time. We have to make informed decisions based on the evidence that's presented in our session that we've just.
I have spoken to Dean Burns, and I've read the minutes of the meeting before bringing this into our assembly. The minutes clearly indicate that that there was big agreement on carbon neutrality. There was about 50-50 on the divestment issue. What carried today was the issue that it was largely symbolic, and then the vote was taken. The Faculty Senate did, or the UFC did, have some a subgroup meet with the Chief Investment Officer who spoke to them, but I don't know how it was testified to the full faculty.
Thanks. And then, Bridget, if you want to talk a little bit about, I don't know if the employees can really...
Thank you, Melissa. Yeah. The subject has been discussed at the employee assembly. We considered bringing a resolution to the table, but before doing so, we wanted to gather more information. The information that was gathered was what was presented at the UA meeting and was passed on to the employee assembly. I will note that it appears and has been said that this is something that could affect employees greatly. That statement in itself concerns me very much. Not so much that I am fearful of jobs being lost, but I am fearful that the administration turns every time to that statement. And that is something to consider. Is it something that we just go back and are being told and that we just take for granted that is what will happen? Or is it something that we need to stand up to and say, let's look at other options. Let's not go there first.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
Can I?
Yeah.
So I guess just a couple of things. That I have, I worry about when we talk about representative of the constituencies, I worry that there's some real lack of engagement by all of the assemblies, employee assembly included, in what really is the sentiment of the 15,000 undergrads, rather than just the 20 or so around the table or the 30 or so at a committee. So I have reservations about that. I think that to Bridget's point a little bit to sort of counter that, when the endowment took a hit the last time, there were 300 employees on the chopping block. So, do we want to stand up to them as a representative of the employees? I'm not willing to gamble with someone's livelihood. I'm not willing. I wasn't here for that process, but from what I've heard, I don't want to put my constituent group through that process. I think to Jim's earlier comments, we really do run into a slippery slope with divestment and picking apart what we're a part of. We sort of commented in jest about we shouldn't tell our fund managers what to do. We should. They're fund managers. It's their job to get us a high return. We can set some simple parameters. We can ask them to do that in an ethical and moral way. But I think that we're just running into a situation where every assembly will always have some sort of divestment, hot topic, buzzword issue on the table if we allow folks to pick apart our endowment. I don't think it's the smart move for us. I do think that three assemblies passed something, but I don't think that really is fully representative of the community. I think folks with certain agendas push them through certain assemblies, and I do not support this whatsoever. I do not think it's the place for the University Assembly to tell the investment office how or what to divest in. And I'm worried that my constituent group is going to be on the chopping block should we see a dip in the endowment. There's a lot of what-ifs, and I don't think the return for a symbolic statement is worth being, is having to put in the position to say, I'm sorry, but you can't come to work today because there's no money for your position.
Thank you. Funk?
So I guess in a little bit response to what you both were saying, I mean, part of what's coming up in this discussion is the question of whether or not Cornell would be a leader, and I think I would agree totally with Sarah that this is great. We're talking about this at this level. It's great that the Sun reporters are here, and this is getting good coverage. But what I think is really hard about this issue is that when we're looking at these fossil fuel companies, on the one hand, like, there's a lot of terrible things you can point to, but on the other hand, they're fully funding research centers for solar energy at other schools.
they're fully funding graduate stipends and graduate fellowships at other schools, which Alex and I can both tell you is always a concern on the GPSA, is graduate student funding. And we're basically, through this resolution, selectively severing our ties with those companies. And I would agree this global warming situation is pretty intense. But on the flip side, you know, the car dealer lobby just severed ties from Tesla in New Jersey, right? They're not, the oil companies aren't the only companies doing terrible things to the environment. And so it's a little bit arbitrary. Yes, you have to start somewhere. But these are the companies where, like, for example, there's a postdoc in chemistry who we were talking about it. And people, basically graduate students, have board-level access through these fellowships. And so I'm not sure if anyone's pro-divestment has actually spoken one degree of separation from people on the board of BP, but these people are actually interested in developing solar fuels. They're actually reading research papers about it, and they're looking at it. It's just the technology isn't there, and so now they're putting research dollars into it. And so I think we ought to reconsider and look at the nuances of this issue and call these companies to fund our research more and lead on the technological revolution that will come about from these companies.
Are there any other... Randy?
Before this resolution came up, whenever anybody was working on climate change, I asked them, what proportion of climate change is due to natural... The change, I'm not going to say climate change, because that has all these definitions. What part of the warming that's going on is due to humans, and which part, how much is due to natural causes? And nobody knew. Just nobody knew. And I've gotten a lot of information since this resolution has come up. And I'll still say, nobody knows. I may be dense. I may not get it, but I can't figure out where the science is. And so when there isn't understandable data, you say, well, 97% of people believe this. Well, in the history of science, it's changed because one person believes something. It's never been a vote. I don't understand that that's science. I don't get it. I don't think there's any science there. And I want to read George Orwell. He had still, he reflected, not learned the ultimate secret. He understood how, he did not understand why. Chapter 1, like Chapter 3, had not actually told him anything that he did not know. It had merely systematized the knowledge that he possessed already. But after reading it, he knew better than before that he was not mad. Being in a minority, even a minority of one, did not make you mad. There was truth and there was untruth. And if you clung to the truth, even against the whole world, you were not mad. I mean, I'm not a denier. I just don't see the data.
Are there any other UA rep, members?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the vote in the GPSA was 16 to 1. However, there was no one invited to speak against the resolution or to provide any information about divestment from a against case. So I have no qualms for voting against what my constituent assembly did, because this is a completely different debate. I think what was said a lot different than we had fully fleshed out the issue in our own constituent assembly.
Yes,
just a comment. I mean, I believe this is a policy issue. So my view in terms of the experts is that I just like, you know, I'm a biologist, I consider myself an expert in certain fields. You want to find out what the general consensus of the experts is. You know, to be honest, I do not have the skill, the computational skill, to really understand what climatologists are talking about when they talk. But in general, when we find that the mass of individuals that are considered experts in the field all generally agree, then we can use that information to make policy determinations. That's the way it always works. So it's not about whether or not actually we as individuals can understand their science. Their conclusions. It's really about whether or not we trust the system we have in place to help us make informed policy decisions. So I think at this point, you know, that's what we're trying to work with. I'm not an applied mathematician. I can't look at their data and even begin to pretend to understand it. I think that's something that at least I'm comfortable with in terms of the field as a whole helping to drive policy decisions.
that's true for almost everything. Complex technology that we deal with.
So I'm never comfortable with that.
Well, we can't argue about that. That's a view.
I'm going to put you on the second speaker's list because I'm going to have the community members have a chance to speak. Any university assembly members that did not have a chance to speak that would like to speak? Okay. Seeing none, I'll let the community. Are there any community members that have something new to say? Just to make sure that our conversation is concise. Yes, go ahead. Yeah. And can you say your name for the record?
Yeah, I'm Jimmy O'Day. I'm a postdoc in chemistry. A lot of things to say. So, you know, being, I guess, first, as an employee, I recognize the concern of that down there and how that would affect employee employment. That's a big thing. When we're looking at, we've got to look at numbers. The investment office, their numbers say if we could lose $10 million a year on the amount of money that Cornell takes on each year, $10 million. If you look at Cornell's budget, the $2 billion budget, where that money comes from, a lot of tuition, about a quarter of its tuition, a lot of it is from research grants, which, as we've been in postdocs, is doing research grants. And a lot of money from research grants is overhead. So every time you know, we ask money from the federal government to pay, you know, to buy some lab equipment, they also give us money to pay administrative costs associated with that. The amount of income that Cornell gets every year from research grant overhead varies by $10 million a year. So I think $10 million is a bigger shock. It sounds like a lot. None of us want $10 million in our pocket, and none of us want to lay off employees. But I think we have to think these are big amounts. The university operating budget is a big amount of money to work with. So finances, I think we have to really zoom out and ask what we're talking about. And then what $2 million a year is. I want to speak a lot about the role of energy companies at Cornell. This is my research. For the last 10 years, I've been involved in renewable energy research since an undergraduate research position at the National Renewable Energy Lab. Until now, my graduate work and postdoc are renewable energy. These companies are not the avenues towards the renewable energy future. They really aren't. As an example, BP and Shell, they all have good press releases. They've owned wind farms in the past. BP last summer tried to sell their wind farm, but they didn't because they don't want to buy it. Shell hasn't built a new wind farm since 2008.
10 seconds.
I can go for a long time.
I know. Sorry.
These companies are not funding renewable energy research at universities. They really aren't.
Time.
Motion to extend.
I'll let it extend for 30 seconds.
These companies spend a lot of money on other things, though. $600 billion each year looking, what's estimated, just looking for new fossil fuel resources. And contrast that with what the entire world spends on renewable energy research, it's $4 billion. $600 billion versus $4 billion. So that $4 billion is not what fossil fuel companies are spending, it's what the whole world is spending. These companies are not our friends with renewable energy. They have the resources to do it, but they aren't.
Thank you. Any other community members that have something new to say? I just want to emphasize that we've gone way over the time that we put on for this resolution, which I'm fine with, but just keep in mind to keep your comments concise and something new. Go ahead. You can go first, Norm.
I'm Matt Sagley. I'm an incoming undergraduate representative of the UA. And I just wanted to say that I was at the FAA meeting when we talked about divestment, and it sounds like, I mean, people say it was very unanimous, and the vote was fairly decisive. But since then, I've spoken to a lot of undergraduates who, in spite of nearly $2,000 tuition hike, hardly have said that divestment is a great idea, but there is uncertainty. And if you're here as a foreign student where you're paying full tuition, you have no financial aid, or you're a student who's very budget constrained, myself among them, $2,000 that's coming up from a university budget shortfall is a lot. We're already looking to cut our bus passes. We're already trying to find money for that. I saw a lot of people said, well, the investment is an important thing and the environment is key. We can't jeopardize tuition. We can't jeopardize students we can't jeopardize the university's future. I mean, President Scorton said he wants 50% of undergraduates to go abroad. That's going to require university funds. I can't justify, and a lot of my constituents, the folks who can't justify cutting or risking cutting programs or losing money on the off chance this might make a difference. Well, I understand, and I completely agree that climate change is a huge issue. I don't think it's something that we can risk our undergraduates on. I really think it's a problem. I think it's something we need to be aware of. And about the other universities, the other assemblies passing this, they passed it, but we shouldn't just be a rubber stamp. The UA is not just a rubber stamp. There should be discussion. It's great. And I love talking about stuff, because that's how we come to a consensus and we understand each other. But I don't think this is the right time. I don't think the risk is enough. I don't think the rewards are valid. So, thank you.
Okay. Go ahead. And if you could just say your name.
Yeah, I'm David Shallow, a faculty member supporting the resolution. I just wanted to speak to the issue of the representativeness of the Faculty Senate discussion. The resolution was first presented to the Senate, I think it was in August, or maybe early September of last year. It was remanded to, I forget the name of the committee, but the university committee that looked it over. That was then sent to the Financial Policies Committee. That committee met with A.J. Edwards about money that was being actually reported at the time of the resolution, vote their opinion that although they had heard Mr. Edwards' view and they had heard our view, they really didn't know. So they were kind of agnostic on they really couldn't say whether they believed the arguments or not. The Faculty Senate, at the time it voted, was aware that President Scorton was already against, had already stated he was against investment based on the student resolution. There was a comment period online that had, I forget how long it was prior to the vote. It had statements both for and against. And in the actual Faculty Senate meeting, I would not say certainly everyone or the vast majority, there was not much discussion about the issue of accelerating the neutrality issue. That didn't seem to be controversial. Almost all discussion was about the divestment part, and that was overwhelmingly for divestment as the about, I think it was about a 3-1 vote
seconds.
At the end of the day shift.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. David Beamer, from the senior. I'd like to try to respond to a few comments, basically, as much as I can get to in my time. For one, I just want to talk a little bit about university finances. We've spent about almost $200 million since the year 2000 on climate action-related initiatives towards our goal of achieving carbon neutrality on this campus. And those are described as Dan Ross, the sustainability office, the low-lying groups, and that's just achieving the first third, which is to imply that the second two-thirds is going to be substantially more expensive. When you all heard from A.J. Edwards, even his estimate, roughly $100 million over the course of 10 years had to be divested, which we've had very thorough work done by the faculty that has a much lower number. Even A.J. Edwards' basically worst-case scenario number is far below that. To say something about the slippery slope idea, I think climate change does separate itself and does put itself on a tier, if not on the same tier, with potentially a tier above things like Darfur in South Africa, because climate change, unlike basically anything else that I've ever known in my studies of history, affects all of us. If climate change continues, then all of these other slippery slope issues don't matter, because we're not going to have a world that is livable for us anymore. So I want to have everyone keep that in mind. There is an urgency. Why is this pertinent to Cornell? I'll say that as well. Cornell is putting in a few hundred million dollars in a New York City tech campus. If we continue emitting, if we as a global people continue to emit at the rate that we are currently, Roosevelt Island is going to be underwater by the turn of the next century. I also want to just make a comment on the prevalence of student support for this. There have been a number of calls into question of how unanimous the support of the various constituencies were. When we first, when the Student Assembly, I should say, first passed this resolution a little over a year ago, last February, over 25 student organizations and well over 1,000 students, over 25 student organizations signed on, the vast majority of whom were not environmentally minded student organizations. Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I'm Steve Elner, faculty in ecology and evolutionary biology. I want to make one point, and that is that the cost issue is a scare tactic on both of them. Mr. Edwards has refused to reveal where his numbers come from. We've talked to him for hours. The Faculty Senate Financial Policy Committee asked him to run the simulations in public, to show us his assumptions, and show us where his numbers were coming from, and he refused. Our calculations are on the web, and you can check them yourselves, and they show that that 2 million number is a worst-case scenario, a massive worst-case scenario. The most likely outcome is a much smaller cost, and depending on what time horizon you use as your database, it could actually give us more money to digest. So I'm simply saying that, yes, cost would be a concern if Mr. Edwards' numbers, his worst-case scenario, had any basis. But if there is a basis for it, he has refused to make it public. You can look at our numbers. You can run the calculations yourself, and you can see whether you agree with us or not.
Do you have something new to say? Okay, go ahead.
I just want to comment quickly that this being divesting being moved towards activist investing, which I feel is not an appropriate thing for Cornell to be doing. Cornell's endowment is there to support the university, it should be grown at a rate that provides a reasonable income to us. It should not be a tool for protest because that would lead to much lower returns from investment overall, I feel. And it is a slippery slope because once we divest it from fossil fuels, what's the next thing we feel like we need to divest from? And then before you know it, we are not no longer investing down in a way that will provide the maximum yield. Another thing is that this is a negative, this basically, as Dave already said, takes only into account the fossil reserves of these companies. And if we cut our relationship off with these companies, then that closes the door to simple dialogue, which I feel would be much more important than this symbolic gesture. This is a symbolic gesture telling the energy companies we don't want to talk to them anymore. Whereas if we maintain this investment in their companies, maybe we can open a dialogue and get them to invest a bit more in renewable energy.
Okay. So I'm going to, because we're so far over time, I think I'm going to go back to the University Assembly and let the speaker speak there and then see if there's any motion. So, Professor Lau.
Can you please allow some graduates to?
Okay.
Well, you made the decision. I think if we're going to open it back up, we should vote on that. I'm going to object to that.
Also, Richard, graduates.
There's only a few more comments. I mean, if you want
to... Yeah.
A question, there was not a vote to limit debate, so the chair can, at her discretion, return to the public debate. Unless somebody's making a motion to limit debate, then it's seconded, and there's a two-thirds majority to limit debate.
Okay, I'll let it go back open to community members. Please only speak if you have something new to say. And I'm going to limit the speaking time to 1 minute to ensure that everyone has a chance to say whatever new they have to say. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think everyone else has covered most of the material issues. I want to speak to the question of representativeness. Mr. Moore and Mr. Bunk are attempting to represent the grad students. In fact, I told my entire department, I told the dozens of graduate students outside of my department, not a single graduate student I spoke to supported this resolution. Every single graduate student I spoke to thinks that Cornell should absolutely take action on fossil fuels. So, in the first place, I think it's extremely problematic for people to not only reject the actual process of decision-making that went through their assembly, but then go on to speak as this kind of, for this, like, phantasmal group of graduate students. I don't know who they are. I don't know graduate students who don't want the university to take action against global warming because we're young. And we know exactly the fact that we're going to live on a planet that's been afflicted by global warming for the next 50 years. And that's not something we want.
Point of clarification.
Yeah.
How many did you speak to?
Dozens? Did I need to give a precise count?
Okay.
He's making a representative statement of a population with no data. I think that's part of the argument at hand. So,
okay. All right. I'm going to call back to order. He said the information that he has.
Just as a clarification.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and have the next speaker. Let's see. Go ahead.
We said that Cornell is a place to do the best research, and part of the technology that's been developed and that will be developed is because we've placed a constraint on the amount of carbon dioxide that we want to put out there, and a lot of our efforts at the university to develop that new technology. By not having the financial side do that, we're limiting them and research for them to become better at investing, getting tools by which they can themselves develop new methods of divesting. And we have two different student bodies, one of them which are very environmentally oriented and are coming out there knowing the problems, and I focus on ecosystem services, mainly on soils, which we've lost over 50% of the fertile soil in the world. So I think that this motion would also limit the advancement that we will have and for the other population that is not environmentally okay. Because that's not the goal that they have
next
right
time.
Now.
Yeah. Any other community members? Yes, 1 minute.
Yeah, so I wish someone had already said this, but I just want to go back to, like, jump off really quickly on the points that Sarah brought up at the very beginning, but a lot of people are saying that, like, shared governance has been laid to rest and is no longer a useful thing.
Please make
just
sure it's new.
Sure, just from listening to this conversation in this room right now, like, what I am hearing is I should never go through any of the assemblies that have been set up to represent me, because if I do and I do everything right, then it still doesn't matter when I get brought here. It says that there's only symbolic power in this assembly, and because there's only symbolic power, we shouldn't use it. So in other words, you're powerless, so we shouldn't do anything. I don't know what other routes we have to take. Maybe we should look into those. But just a few other things. This is also, like, this entire conversation is based on the premise that, like, the amount of money the university has is, like, a strict, like, small, scarce amount, and we're using things like employees being laid off and TCAT and things like that. That's ridiculous. Part of the problem and the point with TCAT and other things is that this university can't just, like, invent money. In 2010, they, like, took out $280 million in bonds to build these new buildings and have, like, a bunch of new research projects. It's absurd. And if there's anything that's actually going to lay off workers in the next few years, it's, like, a financial collapse on the national and international level.
Thank you.
And that's what it's trying to do.
Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to University Assembly members. I'm going to limit the time to 1 minute to make sure everyone has a chance to speak and we can get through this resolution and the other items on the agenda. So first on the speaker is Professor Wells.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to something that was said early on. I think that's like, universities are not just here to train students and do research. Universities are very special places. I will remind you, because you are old enough, there was a little thing called the Vietnam War. Why do you think it ended? Do you think it was because people in Iowa and in the streets decided to not go in and shop? It was universities where it happened. Universities are a place where people think. We are special places. And I think we have a special obligation to society by the very fact that we exist. That has nothing to do with this resolution. It was just your particular statement that I took issue with. And in fact, if you look at the existence of this university assembly, it was because of the fact that the university is a very special place that this was actually informed.
10 seconds.
So that, I just wanted that to be obvious. It had nothing to do with this resolution, but universities are not just high schools.
Next on the speakers list is Professor Wayne. And just a comment, make sure that we are focusing on the resolution and new information.
I would have loved to have heard any evidence, really, what proportion of global warming is due to anthropogenic causes or natural causes. Roger Bacon, as a scientist, said, don't trust authority. Francis Bacon, in setting up his rules of sciences, don't trust authority. First rule. And to end with George Orwell, 1984, which I read when 1984 was in the future, the sun on his face and his girl's smooth
body.
Professor
Wayne, can you focus on the specific resolution and how it affects the university?
Very much, because it's about thinking.
Okay.
The sun on his face and the girl's smooth body touching his own gave him a strong, deeply confident feeling. He was safe. Everything was all right. He fell asleep murmuring, sanity is not statistical, with a feeling that this remark contained in it a profound wisdom.
Okay.
cite George Orwell in the service of global oligarchy.
Okay, next on the speaker's list is Representative Meezy.
I'm late to the question.
Second that?
There are two other people on the speaker's list, and I think that there might be motions that we should at least listen to.
I have to entertain the one that was presented first with the second, correct?
I'm sorry, you said it?
If there's a motion presented, there's a second, we have to entertain that.
The motion has been called, you've got your chart. If it's been seconded, then it's a say debate.
Yeah.
There's
an assent. So there's a motion, there's a second, there's assent on the motion. So I'm going to have us vote to vote. All in favor of calling the resolution to question, please raise your placard. Right.
Correct.
2-3.
Sorry, I need to vote.
Yeah. 8. All opposed? And then abstentions.
What's your total tally?
8 to 2 to 3.
Which is 13?
8 to 3 to 2. Okay.
That's a complete count.
Okay, sorry. So the motion passes, and we will vote on the resolution as it stands. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Abstentions?
9 to 14 and 13
Yeah. 1, 2. There's 3 abstentions because I abstained, so that was the problem. So the first vote was 8 to 3 to 3, so that still passed. And then the vote on this is 8 to 5 to 1, so the resolution passes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So I will turn it back over to.
Thank you, and thank you everybody for participating in today's meeting.
I actually have numbers for you if you want to see from my lectures that I went to school
ladies
for.
Ladies and gentlemen, next item of business is to enter executive session for the purpose of organizing for next year. As part of going into executive session, we're moving into executive session for those people who are not involved. So, the next item of business, members, come to order, please, members. We need to approve election officials for the elections we're about to undertake.
There are private comments.
I have nominated Vice Chair David Funk and VCO Melissa Lucas-Silence. Somebody have this pronounced that wrong.
Lucas-Silence
as our election officials for this election because they are not carrying over at next year's assembly and therefore not involved. I ask for unanimous consent to approve them as election officials. Are there any objections?
No.
Hearing none. Yeah, it's carried. Are there any additional items for the current assembly not addressed?
Hey, Jim, can we wait till we're actually in executive session?
Yes, we will.
Command, we have it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to go into executive session. Members not part of the assembly should depart.
Do you just want to rally?
You want to sit, Jim?
Sure. I'll get back there in a second. It's just
I don't know why we. I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever.
If I miss anything, call me out. Okay.
Can I say something? Maybe a point of clarification that I don't understand. Everyone worries a lot about what your constituents think
but I believe that we're all individual members of the board, and what we do is we actually try to solicit information from our constituents. But it's not as though we need to be driven by what they ask. I mean, if you think that, then think about places like Utah, that the constituents vote against same-sex marriage. So if the constituents of your state, for instance, are against same-sex marriage, it doesn't mean that you as an individual also have to vote against same-sex marriage. So we want to get information from our constituents, but it's not as though we have to feel as though we're, you know, I changed my mind on this issue partly because of the information that some of the members of this committee presented. Now, earlier, in fact, we said that I voted in favor of it, but I thought there were some issues that were raised after the fact that caused me to question whether or not that vote was right or not. So I just thought that was important because it seems a lot of times in these meetings, it's always about the constituent saying, now, that's okay, but we are independent minds and we're elected to act independently.
That's correct.
And we take information from our constituents.
For new members and for old, if I can build on that, just as we try and transition, if you're here as a representative, you're bound by
nothing.
You're bound by your conscience to do what you believe is right for the university, and subject to that, you have no other encumbrances. Your own constituent assembly is a data point to you, but it is not binding on you.
Exactly.
Now, I think we are actually in executive session. Sorry, I don't know your name.
I'm Emma.
Oh, hi, Emma. Welcome. You made it.
She grabs her phone.
Oh, you have it. Excellent. All right. For the purposes of election, I need to turn the gavel over to our unanimously consented elections officials. I'll hand it to David.
You want to
pick it up?
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.